Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Buenos tardes, mi amigo. Hola, my good friend. Cinco de mayo on Tuesday, and I hoped we'd see each other again. You killed my brother last winter. You shot him three times in the back. In the night, I still hear Mama weeping. Oh, Mama always dresses in black.
Hey, baby. It is Mikey Likes You. What's up, everyone? I'm Michael D. Catherwood, host of the greatest health, fitness, wellness, happiness, overall kick-ass living. Don't be a sad sack until the day you die, because you only have so much time on this planet podcast. I wanted to dive into something real quick before I got into the Q&A section, which this podcast is. It is a question and answer, and you can always submit your questions to at Mikey Likes You and the number one, not the word O-N-E, the number one, Mikey Likes You One, at Mikey Likes You One on Twitter, at Mikey Likes You One on Instagram. Of course, my personal Instagram accounts are always available for you as well, at Mike Catherwood on Instagram and that there Twitter. So what I wanted to talk about real quick was I got into a little bit of a internal conflict with myself doing my weekly walking lunges, which I do on Wednesday for the sake of alliteration, walking Wednesday walking lunges. Wow, almost couldn't pull that one off. It's been a long day. And I was doing my walking lunges, and now that I'm back in the gym, I was doing them throughout the lockdown just in my backyard. And 20 minutes nonstop. I got that from Logan over at Deuce Gym in Venice, here in Venice, California. He presented the idea online, and I know him casually. Like if I jog past him, I see him at, you know, a coffee house here in Venice, which is common. It's a kind of a small town within a big town. I'll wave and I'll say, "What's up, dude? How are you?" And we've bumped elbows at certain kind of interactions and dinner parties and whatnot. We're not like buddies. But I do like the guy and respect the guy. He knows a ton about strength and performance and fitness. And he presented this idea of the walking lunge Wednesday, where it's 20 minutes, as many lunges as you can do. Don't count or whatever. Just go for 20 minutes nonstop. That's the only real rule, is just don't stop. And I was doing that throughout the lockdown. And now that I'm back in the gym, I started to add weight, because I do think the walking lunge is an exceptionally good exercise. And it's kind of gotten a bad name amongst like heavy lifters and real strength trainers and stuff, because a lot of female fitness enthusiasts really got into it. So the big macho meatheads just automatically didn't like it, because, you know, you'd always see the like Lululemon chicks doing the lunges. But it's an excellent exercise, I think, to tie in like a complete leg workout. It really does stress like the balance and the proprioception, on top of being an excellent strength training exercise. And you get a little bit of work capacity in there, because it makes you huff and puff. I find it to be a really great exercise. So I'm doing my lunges this past week, and I get up to 135 pounds, which is not a ton of weight, but for a walking lunge, I think it is a lot, because I know that like Ronnie Coleman, who many consider, he's arguably the greatest ever in bodybuilding, but whether you're going to throw Arnold or Lee or Dorian in front of him. You can do what you want to do. Jay Cutler certainly comes to mind. But, like, Ronnie Coleman is undoubtedly one of the greatest bodybuilders that ever walked the face of the earth, and he is in the top three strongest ever. And he would do his walking lunges with 135. So I got up to that weight, and I'm like, you know, I'm good. I think I can call it quits. Anyway, so I get up to 135, and then it's fucking heavy. And I'm doing my walking lunges, and I want to stop. Like, four reps in. Because it's hard. It's difficult. I'm having to brace really hard throughout my low back, my erectors, and my abs to stay upright and the whole thing. And I push through, and I'm like, just don't be a pussy, okay? Honestly, come on, you've got the bar up here. Let's go. Don't be a pussy. So I push through, and I do it. And I'm done, and I'm huffing and puffing. I'm lying there, and I'm, like, beat up. And I started to think about how it takes a real skilled level of understanding, like a real high level of self-awareness and discipline and self-control to walk the fine line between don't be a pussy and don't be an idiot. Because don't be an idiot and don't be a pussy are separated by a very, very thin line when it comes to lifting weights. The reason I bring this up is because I do want you guys and gals to push yourself to places that you don't think you can get to. I do think the mind is the strongest muscle. Not to sound too bro cliche, but the mind is primary. It is the most powerful thing that you can use in any form of exercise. A lot of people, myself included, so many times your brain stops you well before your body needed to stop. That being said, understanding when you're biting off more than you can chew is also very important. So I wanted to tell you this little meaningless fable because I do want you guys and gals to push yourself. I want you to go places that you don't necessarily think you can go. I want you to get uncomfortable because I do think that there's a lot of benefit that comes from that. Not only in your physique, not only in your performance, but in your overall just existence. You become a better person for that. That being said, deadlifting more than you're capable of deadlifting with good form it's not being tough. It's not being intense or beast mode. That's fucking stupid. When you're unable to train for 6 weeks because you threw your back out, you're not being a pussy. You're being an idiot. But if you can comfortably do 3-4 more reps of a squat and you're just breathing hard and you're starting to see, you're getting all wavy in your head, you're on Queer Street there, and not doing those extra reps because it just doesn't feel nice and fun, that's being a pussy. You have to kind of really, and this only comes from experience. I always say, look, until you get really good at understanding that line, err on the side of not being an idiot. I'd rather you err on the side of pussy, not idiot, than on not pussy, stupid idiot. Until you get, 5-6 years of lifting under your belt, then you can really, then you can start to really understand that a little bit more. Because knowing when to say when is actually a really useful skill. And that's why I think a lot of these, fitness influencers, I literally just vomited in my mouth. Awesome. A lot of these fitness influencers and a lot of these folks on Instagram and with the whole beast mode, no breaks, there is no tomorrow nonsense, it kind of tricks you into believing that you gotta go balls to the wall all the time, and that's not true. In fact, it's just dumb. Self-control is just as important as self-motivation. So, just a little tale, a little anecdotal piece of my training to give you guys the information that, start to understand where and when you can push yourself beyond and when you need to pull back, because there's a big difference. The difference between not doing something that's dangerous is that's smart, and that's advanced, and that's enlightened. The idea of pulling short just because it's getting hard, that's not. That's baby shit. Okay, so that's that. Also, this is a Q&A episode. Got a lot of questions, a lot of good ones. But I also got a lot of questions that were pretty thoroughly answered in episodes 15 and 16. I'm not saying this out of some level of annoyance or because I'm bitter about it. I'm saying this because I want people to get this information. So if you have any questions about diet or training, basic overall questions, and you haven't listened to episode 15 and 16 of Mikey Likes You, I highly encourage you, go back and listen to those first. There's a good chance I will have answered your question. So little promotion there. Episodes 15 and 16, I tried my best to just like give you all the necessary, useful information that you need to know before you embark on this journey regarding food and training. It's not super detailed in any kind of one arena, but it is everything that you need, N-E-E-D, need to know to go out and do it. And then I also give you some pointers into kind of just jettisoning all these ideas that you definitely don't need, because there's a lot of that shit out there. All right, let's get to it. Q&A, my babies. Jesus, what's up, Jesus Hernandez? Quickest way to lose weight for a weight challenge, I need this money. All right, good luck, Jesus Hernandez. The quickest way to lose weight, the most effective way to lose lots of weight, water manipulation. That is what fighters who are making weight for a fight to get into a weight class, you can lose, realistically, when it comes to like body mass, you can only lose like 4 or 5 pounds a week. If you're really obese, maybe quicker at first, but it tapers off. Like normal people, that's like starving yourself. You lose 4 or 5 pounds a week. That's honestly, that's not healthy. I encourage people to stick to 1, maybe 2, if you're really overweight, pounds a week when it comes to weight loss. But 1 to 0.5 pounds a week is like a healthy way to go about it. But anyway, if you want to lose tremendous amounts of weight, like some fighters I personally know who are losing 22 pounds in half a day, it's water. And a friend of mine who will remain nameless because he won a lot of money in a weight loss challenge, I guided him through it. And he partied the whole way. He ate like shit and the whole thing because I had him load up on really salty foods, highly sodium-filled foods, and drink a ton of water, like 2 or 3 gallons of water the day of the weigh-in. And then manipulate his water and taper off his water intake to the point that the day of the weigh-in for the at the end of the challenge, he was not drinking any. And then also had pulled out the sodium from his body. What you're doing is you're force-feeding water into your body so it gets better at and more efficient at pushing it through your system. And then taking away any of any water and sodium and it gets you to just literally pulls all the water out of your body, and you carry a lot of water out of your body. This is not healthy. I do not recommend anyone do this. Now, if you have a grand on the line for a weight loss challenge that's 2 weeks long, you're doing what you got to do. I get that. And if you're a fighter making weight, you're doing what you got to do. I get that. I am going to tell you right now, I just gave you the nuts and bolts of it. I am by no means an expert when it comes to water loss and manipulation. There are fucking wizards out there in the bodybuilding world and especially in the combat sports world. Kids who grew up wrestling, by the time they're in their 20s, they graduate college. If you're a high school wrestler, good high school wrestler that goes on to wrestle in college, by the time you get done with that, you know, 4, 8 years of competition, and a lot of these kids are wrestling well before high school. So when you're done with this like decade of wrestling, you are so good at pulling that water out of your body. And high-level amateur and then, of course, professional bodybuilders, they are fucking literally wizards at figuring out how to do it and do it properly. You make one little mistake, you could bloat up. It's really a complex science. But go online, Google Water loss and manipulation. And see what, you know, and see what people have to say about it. Again, I do not recommend this. It is not healthy. Water is really vital to a lot of your cellular activity throughout your entire body, fucking head to toe. Do not try to fuck with your water. Even when I was bodybuilding, I never really messed with water. A lot of guys, and I was doing steroids. I mean, I had no problem doing fucking illegal drugs. It was, I never really messed with like the diuretics and stuff. I stopped drinking water about a day before. So two full days of no water. I sucked on ice cubes and shit the night before a show. And I took out any sodium about 2 or 3 days before, but I didn't do any diuretics. I ate extra asparagus. And I didn't use any sodium. I didn't salt my food at all for like 2 days. And that was the extent of it. And I lost like 6 or 7 pounds of water weight. But that's just my best advice, you know, when you're trying to lose a lot of weight. Now, again, this doesn't have any effect on your physique. Like, especially a lot of women out there who, you know, I'll be talking at like a dinner party just randomly about like MMA or something. And I'll talk about a friend of mine who lost 18 pounds in 7 hours. And they're like, how do I do that? And I'm like, well, listen, it's not going to help you. It's not going to make you look better on your wedding day. That's just weight loss. It's not something that really dramatically affects your physique. You don't look any better. You might look a little drier and like a little less puffy, but my point is like you don't have any less body fat on you. As soon as you go back to eating normally, you go right back to the same weight. This is simply for extreme weight loss. And like I said, getting that Fedia. Let's see here. I am doing more lifting, 6 to 8 rep range. As you mentioned, my goal is to get rid of some fat and reveal more of my muscle. I'm also eating less. So question is, I want to start measuring parts of my body to track results. Should I do this or just use pictures before and after? If I measure, how often should I track that? It's not necessary. I definitely think it gives you a better understanding of what you're doing to your body, but I just feel silly. I honestly, I have no science. I have nothing at all objective or anything good. This is fully just my feelings and emotions. I just feel silly when I'm measuring my body parts. So I don't do it, but if you want to, a lot of people find a lot of value in it. My wife does, with her trainer, and like she's not personally doing it, but every like 2 or 3 weeks, my wife's trainer will, he'll measure just to show her that his techniques are working, you know, and to give her a little bit of insight into if she's making progress or if she's regressing. Because my wife is not someone who is going to put on or lose a lot of weight. My wife's in pretty good shape as is. So I think when she's like getting ready to go film something, she just wants to do that extra bit. So to see like that her booty's the same size or maybe a little bigger and her waist is the same size or a little bit smaller, it does make her feel a lot better. So I would say, you know, weigh yourself every day, right in the morning, right after your first urination. That's the best way, because that's the only time you're ever going to get like a consistent reading. Anytime throughout the day, as soon as you have any water, any food, it fluctuates things. I can go from, I'm typically like 187. I can be 192 by the time I go to bed, very easily, pretty commonly. So you got to think about the variation between that, you know, 5 pounds all throughout the day. But when I wake up in the morning and take my first pee-pee, that's when I'm baseline. So I recommend people do weigh yourself if you're trying to lose weight or gain weight properly, just to keep an eye on the fact that you're doing it right. Because if you're losing too much weight, again, that's not a good thing. If you're gaining too much weight too quickly, if you're trying to put on muscle mass, that's not a good thing. So I do like weighing yourself. It's not about the scale reading. It's much more about your body. But it is a good tool to kind of use to gauge yourself. As far as measuring yourself, I don't think there's any value into doing it more than once a week. Even that is probably too much. You know, every 4 weeks is probably more realistic, because that's when you're going to make some type of real change. So, and the best place to measure are around the navel, around the kind of the right below, for guys, right below your balls and around your booty, like the thickest part of your booty. for ladies, be right below your vagine, and around your thickest part of your booty. Around your, around the thickest part of your thigh, and then calves and ankles. And then sometimes, you know, especially dudes, I don't know. I mean, there's probably a lot of yoked out chicks out there, but a lot of dudes like to measure their arms. I've never cared. I mean, when I was, believe me, you know, when I was like a meathead, I, you know, 19-year-old meathead, I definitely cared. But that's another place that a lot of people find, you know, a lot of value. So measuring yourself. Let's get back to these questions. Giovanni Pazzanato. Q&A question for you. I do fasted cardio in the morning, and I begin adding collagen to my morning coffee in order to help with my joint support. I do this on a daily basis. My question is, if this would be considered breaking a fast, I add 2 scoops to a black cup of coffee. My assumption is yes, because it has 11 grams of protein content and my body would initially pull from this. Even though it is a minimal amount of calories, 16 calories, would this throw me out of a fasted state? Thanks for taking the time. Love the podcast. Well, okay, I need more information. 11 grams of protein is at bare minimum 44 calories. Every gram of protein has 4 calories. So I don't know how 2 scoops equaling 11 grams of protein can be 16 calories. But if you did the measurements wrong and it is in fact 16 calories, that is not going to take you out of a fast. But I think collagen protein is great and I get it. You know, do it. Do your damn thing. If you're trying to engage in intermittent fasting, just fast. A lot of people are like, but I take my MCT oil, my bulletproof coffee in the morning, and then I don't eat till lunch. That's not fasting. If that works for you, go do it. But if you want to fast, if you want the beneficial aspects of fasting, even on a day basis, like the 16-8 fasting protocol, if you want the longevity, digestion help, all that, fast, like really fast, like don't take in calories. Have water. Black coffee's okay. A small amount of sugar-free gum, shit like that, you know, sugar-free, zero-calorie beverages. That's fine. But don't take in calories. That's a fast. People who add MCT oil or coconut oil or protein, or that's not fasting. Again, if that tides you, if it's low amounts of calories and it tides you over till your next meal and it's helping you lose weight and you feel good about it, do it. I'm not saying don't do it, but don't, you're not fasting. Okay, so let's make that very clear. And you don't have to. You don't have to fast to get the benefits of like separating your meals and the ghrelin and the insulin regulation and the better blood sugar stuff. You know, just spreading your meals out, going from 5 or 6 times a day, you know, with the snacks and stuff of eating to 2 or 3 times a day is going to have benefits. And spreading them out from 2 to 3 hours to 5 to 6 hours is going to have benefits. But if you want to do a real fast, like a 16-8 fast or a every other day fast, the Eat, Stop, Eat is the book, I believe, that really kind of talked about that, then fast. Seriously. Black coffee or plain unsweetened tea and water. No, that's not a question. That's just a nice comment. Thank you. This is a really good question. I'm not going to use this fellow's name because this is kind of personal, but I think this is a really good question, especially for you parents out there. Recently, I was talking to my 12-year-old daughter about BMR, and she expressed some interest in the subject as it relates to diet. I know you have young ones as well. I do. I have a 6-year-old daughter. How young is too young to start calorie tracking? 12 seems young, but at the same time, if she's interested in it, I can imagine it could be a good habit to start early. I don't want it to become an obsession either, especially in a female. Very, very good question. This is from a guy, so he's a father. Very, very good question, and a lot of really good kind of nobility there too. I mean, because kids in general, we don't want to make paranoid or anxiety-ridden about things they shouldn't be anxiety-ridden about. It is I don't want to play any kind of gender slant here, but I think it's worse for girls. Young girls in this country deal with body image issues more. I'm a guy that has bad, bad body issues. But by and large, it tends to be much more of a female thing. Young girls getting obsessive about how much they're eating is a really dangerous thing. A crazy dangerous thing. My advice to you, and this comes from someone I want to reiterate very clearly. I am not a mental health professional. I am not a MD. I am not a scientist of any sort. But I am someone who knows a lot about nutrition and dieting. And I'm someone who has struggled with body image issues and eating issues. And I have a daughter. And I've done a lot of thinking about this. But again, let me please, please, please reiterate. Anything that you may be worried about when it comes to mental health, I'm just a guy who has experiences, and I definitely think I can tell you what my experience has been that has led me to being happier and healthier, and I can tell you what my experience has been where I easily recognize that I fucked up. I hope that can help people, but I am not a professional. So if you are at all squirmy about things, if there's any ambiguity to what you're doing or what you're thinking, please, please, please check with a professional, always. But here's my take. If she outwardly expressed interest in nutrition and diet, that can be a really good thing. And to maybe fuck around with like my fitness pro or my fitness pal or another calorie tracking app and just kind of take a look at different foods and look at the tremendous difference in the calorie intake of like how big a bowl of spinach is to get to 100 calories versus how small a tablespoon of peanut butter is to get to 100 calories, as almost like a science project. Be like, oh, check this out. Isn't that crazy how different foods can be, you know, look at this tablespoon of butter. This is 120 calories. Look at this 4 or 5 ounces of chicken breast, skinless chicken breast. This is 120 calories. Kind of crazy, right? Yeah, it's kind of crazy. Look at how much vitamin C and potassium is inside this potato, or how much potassium is in this potato. Look at how much vitamin C is in this orange. Making it more about understanding and broadening her scope, I think can be a good thing. Getting kids to be neurotic about calories, though, can be a devastatingly dangerous thing. That will stick with them forever. So, you know, I think you do sound, just by the way you worded your question, I think you sound like a pretty smart, pretty caring, lovable dude who is really invested in your daughter's health. And 12 is not 6. My daughter's 6. 12 is, you know, 12's what, 6th grade, 7th grade? She's got some smarts. You know, her left brain's kicking in pretty hard, so she can separate the hey, I need to go on a diet from the, oh my gosh, wow, this food seems really healthy and not very calorie dense considering how much nutrients is in it, and this food seems like pretty devoid of nutrients and has a lot of calories. That doesn't make a lot of sense. And then maybe even button it with some ideas about, like, not to get too complicated, but just some ideas of like diabetes and blood sugar and chemical responses to certain foods. You know, that can go a long way. My daughter, for instance, has never eaten fast food. Now, I don't say this because I'm so perfect. I'm such a good parent. My daughter eats cake and donuts and all that shit and ice cream and like any kid. And I don't ever want to be the guy that deprives my daughter of sweets and enjoyment and normal kid food. But I've gotten her to wrap her head around, like, you want a hamburger and fries? Okay, we're not going to fill-in-the-blank drive-thru place. Let's go to this local kind of artisan burger joint here in Venice or Santa Monica or something. Well, how come, Papa? Well, let me explain. And I gave her in details, like, where these animals come from. They make their own bread at this place, whereas opposed to the other bread there, it's got a lot of, like, sugars and a lot of different preservatives and stuff, and I can't even pronounce it, and it doesn't, it's probably just not as good for you. And one thing's for sure, it's definitely going to make you feel kind of poopy after you eat it, whereas this other stuff, it might not do that. If you want some pizza, we're not ordering it from fill in the blank, you know, from Schmitza Schmutt or Schmamino's or something like that. And nothing against those companies, but you get my point. We go to like a local pizza joint, and I was like, yeah, see him kneading the dough back there? Oh, yeah, yeah, and it comes, that's normal, you know, kind of unbleached flour, blah, blah, blah. So I think this is an important topic, and I really thank you for the question. And that's just my take. That's what I found to be helpful and useful and effective in my life. But man, tread lightly, because kids and food, especially in this country in 2020, where these fast food and convenience food and kind of like snack food companies have gotten to be so fucking good at doing their job. They have made such amazingly convenient, amazingly tasty, amazingly hyper palatable foods that we all need to kind of do our part to make sure that these kids don't become accustomed to eating these hyper palatable foods, because it's just going to be so much harder when they get to be 17, 18, 19, 20, and they have to start making that decision on their own. It really, because, you know, I think we all know, like, as adults, it's hard to drive by, you know, Jack in the Box and then say to myself, nope, I'm going to wait till I get home and make a salad. That takes a lot. It takes a fucking lot. A lot of emotional kind of, a buildup of an emotional kind of toughness. It takes an incredible amount of experience and understanding of yourself. It takes the ability to kind of forego immediate indulgence for the sake of long-term health. That's not something most kids are even equipped to do. So, you know, I just, that's that. I don't know how much more else I could say, because I don't want to, I never, ever, 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 ever want to even be misunderstood to think that I'm trying to get across the message that you need to tell a 12-year-old girl to count calories, okay? That's in my opinion, like, super no-no number one. Do I think it's a good idea to have children get a better understanding of their food, therefore getting, hopefully, subsequently getting a better relationship with food? Absolutely. Absolutely. And then, you know, I leave that up to you, the parent, to figure out how to best do that, because every kid's totally different. I just kind of naturally did that, even though I got the body image issues. I always had a pretty healthy relationship with food. Like, my mom just always cooked a lot. She was really into, like, Mexican comfort food, you know, the things that she knew how to cook from her childhood. And there's just always fresh, and not canned, like, fresh pinto beans always available, like, an entire giant pan. And there was always homemade tortillas, and there was always some form of meat, and there was always like sliced up cilantro, and always like, you know, lots of like soups, like cocido, and like, you know, meat and vegetable soups and stuff like this. I just got to the point where, like, that's what was I was accustomed to, and I certainly liked pizza and burgers and cake. But I it's kind of naturally fell in step with understanding, like, the some foods are nourishing and some foods make me feel like shit. Let's see. I'm going to get away. Where are you at in regard to anti-inflammatories, ice therapies, cryo, etc.? Is there a preventative class of supplement that you've incorporated into your regimen? I done the cryo a couple times. I like it. But I don't like it for $90 like it. And, you know, I got it. There used to be a sponsor when I used to do Loveline. There was a sponsor, a local sponsor that did cryo tanks and stuff. So I would go do it for free. It was cool. I liked it. I don't think it's any better than an ice bath for $7, maybe. Probably cheaper. Get a cup, like, 5-pound bags of ice, get a couple of them, put them in your bathtub, put in cold water, you're good. I also I don't believe in any supplements per se when it comes to anti-inflammatories. I know a lot of people talk about curcumin. The science to me isn't that compelling yet. I'm not saying it's bad, and there is turmeric, you know, the main constituent from turmeric that is effective, the curcumin. It can suppress estrogen a little bit. You know, there's some science that it says it's good. I'm not saying don't, if you want to spend your money on it, do it. But it's not, like, as far as like anti-inflammatory stuff, I think a lot of it is based around day in and day out diet and certain practices. Sleep. You gotta sleep a lot. That has an insane effect on inflammation. Sleep good every night. Do it. Do not eat pro-inflammatory foods. Try to eat foods that you know aren't going to cause inflammation in your body. A lot of these seed oils and stuff like that, that's a problem for a lot of people. Some people find that legumes or beans are problematic. I don't, but some people do. Some people find dairy to be inflammatory. I don't, but some people do. Just kind of get to know, understand. If you relegate yourself to fruits, vegetables, and lean protein, you're going to be doing a lot of good for the inflammation. Contrast showers. That is something I do definitely recommend for everyone, and I believe in it, and I do it. Sometimes I shower twice a day, usually just once, and when I do it, hot, as hot as I can take it for 2 minutes, I estimate. As cold as I can get it for 2 minutes, I estimate. Hot, for 2 minutes. Cold, 2 minutes. And then finish, hot. I always finish and begin and finish with hot. And it makes you feel great. You just feel like I feel like I can jump over the moon. Woo! And also, it does affect my recovery and my soreness and my inflammation. There is actual science with there. I believe a Romanian, potentially Romanian, maybe Bulgarian weightlifting team showed like a long double blind study on the contrast shower, and its effect on muscle soreness, recovery, and inflammation, and it's there. And the Turks, the Persians, the Russians, I can go down the list of like a real myriad of cultures that have been using this technique for centuries. And there's a reason for it. So I'll never forget it, the Iron Sheik, who is one of the funniest people that's ever lived. But when he came on Loveline, we were talking about pumping iron and stuff, because Dr. Drew, as a lot of you know, is buff and loves pumping iron and loves weightlifting and training and dieting and all that. And the Iron Sheik, even though he's can barely move now, he, you know, 25, 30 years ago, the Iron Sheik was a specimen. And he wrestled for Iran, for the country. He was real close to being on the Olympic team. And then after that, he was at one of the head of security for the Shah of Iran. He was a bad motherfucker, and he was jacked. And we started talking to him about training. And I like to do the squat. I do the. You are baby. You can't squat. And he starts talking about like exercise. But then he started talking about how I every day take shower. 20 minute shower, cold and hot. And then he talked about how he'd done that since, you know, being a little boy as a wrestler in Iran. So, fun little story. Let's see here. Oh, as far as inflammation goes, too, BPC-157, which is a peptide. I don't know if you can get that over the counter. It might be something you have to get with a prescription. But it is a peptide, and BPC-157, that shit works. I don't know if it's banned for some sports, if you're an athlete out there. I don't want to encourage people to pardon me. I don't want to encourage people to do something that's going to get them in trouble, because I'm just not sure if that peptide is over the counter or not. And I'm just not sure if it's legal for different athletic organizations. But if you're just worried about inflammation and fighting, you say you're getting older and you still want to train hard, BPC, Brian Paul Charles, BPC 157, that works. That absolutely works. There's a boatload of science to show that it works. I've used it. I don't currently use it, but I've used it. It works. And I haven't seen any compelling science that there's side effects. And it's not something you have to inject. They make oral administration that seems to be just as good. Let's see here. A couple more. Going through my motherfucking Instagram. Going through my motherfucking Instagram to find questions. Hey, Mike. Do you see benefits in German volume training? I'm asking because you mentioned resting periods between sets, and GVT has 90-second rest periods between sets. Yes, I do recommend it. If your main concern is hypertrophy, getting jacked, getting bigger, if you're a skinny dude or skinny chick and you want to gain muscular size, I think German volume training is the best. I am yet to see something more effective. German volume training basically revolves around 10 sets of 10 reps with a weight that you can pretty much handle for 20 reps. So it's not by the 8th, 9th, and 10th set, you're hurting. You're not necessarily going to get 10, but that should be your goal of 10 versus 10, same weight the whole time. And with a shortened rest period. That is a very, very effective, and this goes back to super training, you know, the old Russian book, which I think is like the Bible of strength training and performance. You know, that high level of volume, if you pick the right exercises and you keep to the rest periods and that volume being so high, if you're doing 10 sets of 10 squatting and bench pressing and chin-ups and stuff, that works. Now, here's my one caveat. If you are a athlete of any sort, if you're a competitive athlete, do not get into German volume training because it fucks you up. You are so sore all the time. All the time you're sore. You're never not sore, especially if you do it right. If you push yourself and you really commit to German volume training, you will grow muscle and you will minimize your fat growth. But you are going to be sore, like real sore. So, yes, I believe in German volume training. Now, the reason I didn't specifically say that in the training episode is because I don't think that that's correct for everyone. I don't think that it's a good program for like the average person that just wants to look better naked. I think it's for someone who wants to dramatically gain muscular size. And you can gain muscular size in the 6 to 8 rep range with higher rest periods, and even down in the 3 to 5 rep range. It's just not specifically for that. And you will get the benefit of getting stronger, which is, in my opinion, the paramount kind of characteristic when it comes to performance. Because, pardon me, gaining strength as a human being, as a Homo sapien, gaining strength, overall strength, not power, not endurance, gaining strength, has the most carryover to the other attributes. If you are someone who has really committed to getting stronger, and you decide you want to run a marathon, that can be done relatively easily. If you are someone who has gotten marathon-level endurance but hasn't committed at all to getting stronger, you are fucked if you decide you want to get stronger. You are fucked. If you are someone who has developed exceptional power, you know, say like jumping ability, leaping ability, or sprinting, but haven't at all committed to strength, and you want to strengthen yourself to then maybe have carry over into a different event or to let's say you're a basketball player and you've worked your power, which is explosive, not necessarily heavy weights, but explosive ability, the ability to create force at explosive speeds. Basketball players, especially at high levels, have great power development. But you're just graduated college, you're going into the NBA, you're potentially trying to get into the NBA. You already have the power. You have the leaping ability and the explosiveness. But you're a power forward trying to get into the NBA, and you're 190 pounds at 6 foot six. You want to get strength so that you don't get pushed around in the key. Trying to transition power, strict power into strength, it's not easy. It's not easy. Now, if you are someone who is really strong and you want to develop power, you can do that. You can do it pretty quickly. That's why fighters have blocks. CrossFit athletes have blocks, what they call blocks of training. It's periodization. Even high-level weightlifters, power people who are at the peak of power development, the Olympic weightlifter, they have blocks where they focus on strength. Absolute strength. And then they have blocks where they're focusing specifically on bar speed and power. And an MMA fighter, a boxer, they do the same thing. They work, you know, far away from the fight. They're working on strength and kind of strengthening the chassis of the car. Then they work on, obviously, a lot of endurance. So they're making the car more fuel efficient. But then it comes down to horsepower right before, the, you know, where they're working on the power. And that's the ability to get from 0 to 60. So you just got to look at it that way. The best, always the best thing to do when it comes to performance is to work each, is to have a periodization of each. Now, it's not realistic for the average person, so that's why I say stick in that five to eight rep range, really constantly progressively overload, getting stronger in that rep range over time with good form. That's going to be the best overall bang for your buck. You want to look ripped, lean, muscular, have muscle, have strength, and then also have the ability to go out and like do things in life, that has the most carryover. Okay? I'm willing to field the argument if someone feels differently. And I know, look, if you're a triathlete or something and you're hearing that, you're like, ah, fuck off. I'm in great shape. And yes, you may be. My point is if you're a competitive marathon runner and then someone challenges you into being a CrossFit athlete by March of next year, you're fucked. If I, as a kind of a meathead, decide I'm going to run the LA Marathon by March of next year, which I believe the LA Marathon's in March, I'll be okay. I'll be okay. You know, I mean, I'm certainly not going to win, but I'll be respectable. And I'll finish, and I will have a non-embarrassing time. So that's all I'm talking about when it comes to like the human animal. We are very gifted when it comes to endurance. We are very gifted. We are not that strong in comparison to the animal kingdom. We are not strong. We are not powerful. We are not fast. We are really not fast. Even, you know, like Usain Bolt maybe could do okay out in the like the African plains against like a cheetah or like other land animals. Don't even get me started with fucking animals that fly, because they go so fast, so fast. We're not that fast. We're not that strong, but we got pretty damn good endurance naturally. Like the animal that we are, we're pretty gifted with that. So that's why I say, focus on your weaknesses. Just like in anything you do in life, it's very important. I always like to strengthen my weaknesses. I'm not saying neglect your strengths, but focus on your weaknesses, because that way when it comes time to bear down, if you have to work on your strength, you'll be better. You'll be better for it. Speaking of not that strong, not that fast, I would mention Ronnie Coleman at the beginning of the podcast. I have a Ronnie Coleman. He was just on the Joe Rogan Experience. The nicest guy on the fucking planet. I love his outlook on life. He's practically he can't walk. He's a crippled man, and he used to be the greatest bodybuilder on the planet. And he was this amazing athletic specimen. Now he can barely walk, and he's like, oh, I'm fine, I'm cool. It was worth it, man. It was worth it. He's the most southern accent I've ever, the most like deep south accent ever. It's so charming. He's such a nice guy, and he has such a great outlook on things. So Ronnie Coleman, when he was still Mr. Olympia, or it was like a year or two after he had been his long reign of Mr. Olympia's, he was coming to do a guest posing thing in Pasadena at the Pasadena Civic Auditorium. Lonnie Taper used to do a lot of these bodybuilding shows at the Pasadena Civic Auditorium. And Pasadena, all the way back to like Bill Pearl and Doug Brignoli, has a pretty good long history of like bodybuilding and strength training. The Pasadena, California does. It's just a place that there's been a lot of people that are into it. That's where I grew up. So I was working out at Gold's Gym in Pasadena at the time, and I was still living out there. And Ronnie Coleman's comes into town to do a guest posing thing. Now, the manager of Gold's Gym Pasadena at the time was a friend of mine. His name was Ruben. He was a very nice guy. And he's like, dude, I'm going to the airport to pick up Ronnie Coleman. I go, no fucking way. You got to be shitting me. He's like, yeah, it's going to be crazy. So the very next day, I believe it was a Saturday. It was the day he was going to do the posing. He's at the gym training. And I'm like, I'm going to go there. I'm going to train. I'm just going to watch Ronnie Coleman. And he has like a weight caddy. He's like a dude that just, he didn't train. He just walked around with Ronnie Coleman helping him rack and unrack weights. So he's training, and he's deadlifting and doing back, and he's doing fucking insane weights. I mean, he's just a crazy strong, powerful dude. And I go over to like a bench, a regular upright bench, not a bench to bench press, but a bench to like sit on and do overhead stuff. And I was doing overhead shoulder presses. No, I'm sorry. It was an incline bench that I put up almost to perpendicular from the ground. But it was like really, really slight angle, but it was almost perpendicular. So it was, but it was an incline bench. And I'm sitting there. I'm doing shoulder presses, right? And I'm taking bigger breaks between my sets because, you know, that's what I do. And I do like two sets of warm up, and I get to my working set. And it's 80 pounds. And, yeah, I know. Great. I'm not the biggest, strongest guy. But, you know, I felt like it was respectable. 80-pound dumbbells. I'm going to put them over my shoulders, and I'm going to shoulder press them. And so I get the 80s, and I come back to sit down. And as I'm walking back to my little bench, I see Ronnie Coleman and his little weight caddy. They're just, like, standing by it. And I go, oh, dude, are you waiting for this? He's like, oh, man, you can finish, man. I'll wait for you. I'll wait. I was like, no, you can work in if you want. He's like, okay, man, you go ahead then. You do your set and I'll work in. I'm like, all right, man. Oh, wow, thank you. And I'm trying not to be fanboy because it's Ronnie fucking Coleman. And this is like got to be like 2004. So he's still the fucking man. And so I go. I sit down. I do my set. And put the weights down. And he's like, oh, nice job, man. I'm like, oh, thanks, dude, thanks. I'm a big fan. He's like, oh, thank you so much. He sits down at that incline bench and starts to curl the 80 pounders. I go, oh, you want me to put these? No, you can leave, man. You can leave them. I'm like, okay, fine. And he sits down and just starts curling them, like repping them. I've never felt so inadequate. He's so jacked, though. But he totally punked me without even, like, trying to. He just took, like, my heavy, I'm grunting, shit's coming out of my mouth set with overhead press, and he just started, like, casually curling it. Seated. Fucking awesome. Aight! I got some exciting podcasts coming up. Friends of mine. People I don't know yet that I've lined up. Really exciting, smart people. It's going to be awesome. And in this crazy mixed up world that makes you think that nobody cares, remember, I do.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.